Money Sense is brought to you by the Ellenbecker Investment Group, three-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau's Torch Award for Business Ethics and Integrity. The Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once. By providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com. Listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 p.m. and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. We're located in Pewaukee, just east of 164 and Capitol Drive. We're in the Town Bank Building. We're also in the Village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank Building across from Winkies. And we're now able to service our clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. If you'd like to know more about us and our advisors, please visit ellenbecker.com for more details. My guest today is Mike Roth, and he's a founding partner of the Stark Investment Company. And Mike has been doing this radio show for over 20 years. It's been amazing. We have Mike come on twice a year and tell us what's going on in the world. And I always ask him to bring his crystal ball so that he can give us an idea of where we've been and where we're going. And so welcome to the show again, Mike.
Well, thank you. As always, it's a privilege.
You know, this has been a crazy year. On top of the market being strong in most segments that people see, interest rates being crazy low, and COVID, and you know, the closing down and businesses closing down and people becoming so much more aware of their health and the factors with that, and worrying about the markets. I mean, what does this last year look like for when you try, you always break it down into such a simple way of people hearing it and being able to understand it. But how do you, you know, what do you think about this last 11, 12 months?
Well, you're absolutely correct. It's been quite an unusual period of time. It's one of those we're going to look back on and shake our heads and wonder what exactly was that all about? And you put your finger on at least one of what I would say are three factors which have been primary drivers, both in terms of where we've come from, where we are today, and where we're going. And that was COVID, obviously. Duh. I mean, everyone realizes that has been a huge factor in the markets and the economy and our personal lives. In addition, at least in terms of the markets and the economy, we're going to focus on the Fed, which just so happens to have met just about 45 minutes ago. So we have fresh information as to what they're thinking about the future. And then the third factor is inflation, which is obviously a big headline item right now. And this has been building throughout the year, but really exploded in the last few weeks. So looking back, starting with just where we've been, you said it, it's been actually a very good year for the markets. When you look at the indices, the S&P has been up around 20% for the year. The NASDAQ around 17%. Small caps, a little less, and we'll talk about why, around 9%. If you just landed today, you would have said, wow, great year, must have been pretty smooth sailing. but we know, because we've lived through the entire thing, and it's been anything but that. In fact, it's hard to remember, but we came into the year with actually a lot of enthusiasm. I think people felt, okay, we've got the vaccines. If everybody gets vaxxed up, or at least a significant number, we can start putting all of this nightmare behind us and we can get back to living our lives. And the market took that as saying, great, that means that companies will be reopening, economic activity will start picking up. And there was the so-called reflation trade. Hey, we're getting the band back together, and the market reacted to the idea that the economy was going to take off. And then we know what happened next. You know, the next plot turn was Delta. Oh my gosh, here comes Delta, and everything went in reverse. Obviously, policy response to it was pretty much of a lockdown mentality. Globally, in the United States, there was obviously a mixture. Not every state responded with the same degree of severity, but I think it was, here we go again. And the market reacted by, you know, coming off, because the reflation trade now seemed to be receding. Oh my gosh, it's not going to be party on into the summer, because Delta is essentially going to be a wet blanket to the whole thing. And then there was the vaccines and talk about potential viral medicines that could help prevent the most severe manifestations of it. So again, reflation trade, the mentality that, yeah, okay, Delta's not great, but we're going to get through this. And you started to see some dialing back of the more onerous, restrictive lockdown policies. So the economy, again, started to come back. And on the back of that, the market, again, sort of took off. And it looked like we were just going to roll into the fourth quarter and, again, put all this behind us. Football stadiums were packed, restaurants full, blah, 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 blah. And then Omicron. Oh my gosh, here comes the new variant. And so that's where we are today. So looking back at sort of the year up until where we are at the moment, the Fed policy fueled the party. They were very accommodative throughout. Every month they were buying $120 billion worth of securities. So they kept pumping money into the economy. That kept the party going. In addition, we all know the federal government put out a number of stimulus programs. They were literally dropping money from helicopters, mailing checks to people, trillions of dollars worth. So that, again, fueled the economy, fueled the market. So you had essentially a federal policy and a fiscal policy that was very, quote unquote, accommodative. We already talked about what was going on with COVID. But ultimately, the potential of vaccine relief led to, I think, more optimism, people responding to it by returning to their lives, policymakers in general, not everywhere, but in general, pulling back from the most draconian aspects of locking down the economy. So that was a plus for the market. Inflation really started to come to the fore more toward now. Inflation was sort of coming along, and you may recall there was a lot of debate whether is this transient, quote unquote, and it's just going to pass, and that's where the Fed was for a long time, or is this something more persistent, something that you and I probably remember, you know, a good old 80s style inflation, or is this really something that's going to pass by in a few months? Now, the reason why people are concerned about inflation, if you just translate this into how the market thinks about it, is that when you have inflation like we're seeing now, typically you see banks raising interest rates. And that essentially is saying the cost of capital for companies is going to go up. Their cost of business is going to go up. That's not good for companies. So that is why it's not good for the market. In addition, usually if you have this kind of inflation, it means their cost of inputs goes up. So it squeezes their profit margins. So inflation is generally considered to be not good for the market for those reasons. But I think for most of the year, yeah, inflation was coming along, but I don't think people were really panicking about it. It was more of this debate over, is it transient, is it persistent? At least up until the last few weeks. So that's took us to where we are now. If you hop to where we are now, essentially, you'd say, well, yeah, great, Mike. The market's performed well. Valuations are high. So this is not a cheap market. But we also know that essentially interest rates are still zero. There's no place else to put your money. There isn't a cheap asset class out there. So people have even now continued to put money into the market. We've seen a little tax related selling going into the end of the year. And there was some risk management around the Fed's announcement today. But generally speaking, I think people have been pretty satisfied with how the markets perform up to this point. The Fed policy changed today. And it changed in a way that didn't surprise the market. In fact, when I left the office today, the market, after hearing what the Fed announced, went up. And essentially what the Fed foreshadowed, and I emphasize foreshadow because the Fed is not in the business of surprising anybody. They want to telegraph what they're going to do. And what they telegraphed in November was that, you know, this inflation is starting to look a little more persistent-y and less transient-y. And we're going to retire the transient term. And even in November, they said, we're going to start to dial back our purchases of assets, which is their way of saying we're going to pump less money into the economy. And by dialing it back, they were doing about $120 billion a month, and they were going to reduce it by about $15 billion a month.
Almost in half.
Well, and almost it gets better in that sense. And what they foreshadowed coming into this meeting was that, you know what, we might have to accelerate that, because what happened was last week you had the consumer price index number come out, and it surprised to the upside. It was 6.8%, which was the highest inflation rate year over year since 1970s. So almost 40 years a high. And even if you strip out the more volatile components, it was still something like 4.9%. And that got the Fed's attention. In addition, just this week, we had the producer price index come out, and it had the highest monthly increase ever of all time. So obviously, inflation is roaring. We'll talk about that a little bit, but the response function of the Fed was, we've got to get going here. We don't want to get behind the curve. We need to get more aggressive. And so the expectation coming into today's meeting was that they are going to accelerate the dialing back of the purchases so that by March, they'd be at zero. They'd be ending the purchase program. And then they'd be in a position to begin raising interest rates. And the whisper foreshadowing was, well, they're probably talking about 2 to 3 25 point basis point increases. So over the course of the year, we're talking about going from zero interest rate to perhaps 0.75 interest rate. And the market ultimately was fine with that. I think the market said, well, yeah, we know you need to get in front of inflation. But what you're talking about doesn't seem excessive, seems like it's a measured response. And so as a result, that's what we got today. They came out and said, essentially, we're going to now increase our dialing back of purchases from $15 billion a month to $30 billion a month. So by March, we're done. And then they didn't come out and say we're going to raise interest rates. In fact, they seemed to say, we still think that if employment looks good, we're going to hold off on raising interest rates. But they also said in the same breath, if we need to, we could see potentially doing 3 this year. So that was within what the market was expecting. Hence, the market actually rallied on that news. They also said, well, we may need to do 3 in 2023 also, which they just threw in there. It doesn't really mean anything. Because ultimately, the Fed is going to do what it needs to do depending upon the data.
Wow. My guest today is Mike Roth, and he is the founding partner at Stark Investments. And as I said earlier, he's been on the show all of 20 years looking at the different markets and coming on to talk to us. And I guess one of the things I would say, Mike, is when we come back, let's talk about what the inflation is going to look for the average person, because everybody hears the word inflation, they hear taxes, and they start to panic. And it's like, should we take our money out of the market? What should we do? So let's talk a little bit about what that actually means to the individual. And the other thing that I'm curious about is, we talk about unemployment. It doesn't seem like a lot of people want to work. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. My guest today is Mike Roth. He's a founding partner at Stark Investments, which is right here in Milwaukee. And we're talking about where we've been and kind of where we're going. And I had mentioned to Mike that everybody really doesn't often know how is inflation going to impact individuals, how is it going to hit their own pocket? And of course, we talk about taxes and people start to panic. And so, Mike, what is your take on all of that?
Sure. And you're absolutely correct. In fact, you can view inflation as sort of a silent tax. And it's silent in the sense that obviously, you might read about it, And you're going to absolutely see it. So the average person, if you ask me, how do they perceive inflation? I think they perceive it at the gas pump, number one, right? As soon as they, you listen to everybody talk about, oh my God, I just filled up my tank and it cost me $70 or whatever. And you know, they notice that fast. They notice it in their food bill. If they're paying rent, they'll notice it in their rent. So essentially, their buying power is eroding. So if they have X amount of dollars, they now have essentially fewer dollars because things cost more. And we're talking about essential things. The average person should worry about that because unless they can somehow increase their wages or their income in some way, it's essentially just a continued tax that slowly eats away at them. Now, inflation itself is measured in a gross way. So they say, well, inflation for the month of November was up, 6.9%. What that really masks, however, is the lumpiness of the inflationary impact across different spaces. So what we've seen, of course, is that a couple of areas like autos, talk to anybody who's trying to buy a car or even a used car, and they'll tell you it's insane right now. You can't get them. You can't even rental cars. The prices are just stupidly high. Housing is up like, I think, 18% for the year. In some places, much higher. So obviously, location being important. But you can see housing prices essentially going through the roof. No pun intended. Rents are up. Also, similarly, in that 20% range in many instances, you have landlords looking to recoup money that they lost when they had the blocks on any sort of rental changes. You have more people essentially unable to find a house. So if they can't find a house, they want to rent. So you see rents going up. We've seen energy spike, although actually crude prices are down from their highs in October, down about 18%. And that's a bit of a reaction to the concerns over a potential slowdown in economic activity. But ultimately, there are two things that drive inflation, potentially anyway, and we're seeing them both right now. So we're getting it from both ends. One, you have demand. So this is just econ 101 stuff. If you have excess demand, a lot of demand, well, prices go up. On the other side of it, if you have a limited supply, prices go up. If you have both, which is what we're experiencing now, you're seeing explosive inflation. Now, on the demand side, the reason why there's so much of a surge in demand is what we just said about the Fed and fiscal policy. If you pump all this money into the economy, people have money in their pockets and people go out and spend it. So demand explodes. They buy new cars, they buy new houses. Prices go up. They say, that's all right. I've got the money. I'm going to spend it. So it's been demand driven on one side. On the other side, we've had a series of issues. And I think people are pretty aware of this. Supply chain issues, all kinds of bottlenecks in terms of transportation. You know, we keep reading about a gazillion shipping containers stuck in the port of Los Angeles.
On land and water.
Right, exactly. And part of this is COVID driven. And part of it's due to another fact we'll talk about in a minute, which is employment, which you brought up. But the reality here is that it's really rock and a hard place territory. So, we've got supply issues, can't get the chips to build the cars. At the same time, people have money, they want to buy cars, and hence prices go up the way we've seen them. The factor that you mentioned, employment, is interesting because one of the supply problems has been lack of workers. And the lack of workers is related to the fiscal stimulus, at least it has been for a while, because people were paid so much in terms of unemployment benefits and other stimulus measures, it sort of reduced the incentive to work, for at least for some people. So you've had this situation where, as we all know, companies and restaurants and you name it have been begging for workers. Now, there may be other factors at play here. Some people may have just said, you know what, I'm so freaked out by COVID, I'm not going back to work. Or they may have felt that I don't want to wear a mask. I'm not going back to work. I mean, so you got a lot of different rationales why people might have decided, you know what, I'm just going to sit this one out, at least for a while. So that's been a problem.
I think, Mike, some people learned that they could live on less and they didn't go back to work because they lived on one salary.
Well, exactly. You're exactly correct.
They changed jobs. They changed their whole idea of what they were going to do for a career or for, you know, creating wealth within their family. That was a big thing as well.
Exactly. And the net result is fewer employees. So last month, November, job openings increased by something like 6.9%. So it's a huge jump in job openings. So the jobs are out there, and it's a supply problem when you don't have enough employees to be able to run your business. There's also an inflation aspect to this because obviously the employees that are willing to work, well, they're demanding higher wages. They're saying, wait a second. First of all, I know I've got you over a barrel because you need employees. Secondly, I think you're asking me to do more work because you don't have as many bodies here. And if I'm doing more work, I want to get paid more. And that's inflation. So companies then have to raise prices to pay for the increase in wages that they're paying their employees because they're trying to preserve their profit margins. So one takeaway from all of this is that these factors are intertwined. Yes, the Fed policy is driving this. COVID was driving this. Inflation is now very much driving this. And they're interrelated. And the net result, when you look at where we are now, is that there's good reason to wonder where we're going into the new year. And of course, you're seeing prognostications all over the place because all these moving parts mean it's much harder. Yogi Berra famously said, predictions are hard because it's always about the future. and obviously he was right. But when you have these many factors, I think you have a general consensus right now that, inflation is bad. The unemployment situation is bad. And we're now seeing, obviously, a new COVID strain. And the Fed is pivoting to a more restrictive posture. But I think people are seeing positives among all of those things. The overall consensus, I think, going into the new year, and we'll get into the various factors, is that we will see economic growth, but it won't be nearly what we had last year. We will see upside to the market, but not like this year, probably not another 20% market. After the break, we can get into the various factors behind that positive thinking.
You know, Mike, I'd like to also talk about, you know, what happens if we get another shutdown and are we sort of developing a new normal? My guest today is Mike Roth. He's a founding partner at Stark Investments here in Milwaukee. And we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. If you would like to know more, please go to ellenbecker.com or give us a call at 262-691-3200. My guest today is Mike Roth, and he is a founding partner at Stark Investments. And we have had the pleasure of having Mike on Money Sense for over 20 years, looking at the markets every time at the end of the year and mid, we take a look and see what his crystal ball says. And I'm just kind of wondering if this is going to be our new normal and what happens if we have a shutdown. And maybe we can address that in this segment as well.
Oh, God help us. So the big question as everyone ponders the new year and rolls out their prognostications is, can we go from what we've just experienced, which is a very artificial environment where you've got a huge amount of money getting pumped into the economy, all the stimulus programs and everything else, which obviously fueled the economy, fueled the market. Can we go from that artificial condition to an organic, self-sustaining economic recovery? So the economy essentially being what we've known in the past. That's a very good question. So again, looking at our three factors, we now know, as we discussed, where the Fed is going. The Fed has said, on the one hand, we're going to get more restrictive because we have to start thinking about inflation and fighting inflation. We're pretty happy with where employment is, and that's still a focus for us, but we're going to essentially pull the punch bowl away from the party. So we're going to stop the purchases in March. And after that, we are prepared to begin raising rates. You know, nobody needs to panic. It's going to be modest. But at the same time, the Fed is doing what essentially it always does. And sometimes people make a big deal about this, but the Fed always is data dependent. The Fed always is flexible. That's not a new thing. They will always do what they think they need to do to try to create stability in the markets, stability in employment, stability in prices. It's a tightrope because those things aren't always, sometimes they're mutually exclusive to a degree. So the Fed is essentially trying to take its foot off the accelerator, but not to the point where it stalls out the market or the economy. But at the same time, it wants to make sure that it's tapping the brake enough to essentially stop this inflation before it gets baked into our economy. We now know where the Fed is and where the Fed is going. If we had talked about this a week ago, I would have said, this is where we think we're going. As of today, now we know this is where we're going. No surprises from the Fed. COVID, could we have another lockdown? I'll address that from a policy perspective in a moment. But right now, and I hesitate to even say this because this whole subject is so politicized now, and I'm trying to actually present this without any political spin. I think Omicron is going to be a dud myself. And I have the data, at least to date, to back that up, which is not a lot of data because we've only experienced it for a short period of time. But worldwide, there have been no deaths from Omicron worldwide, with one exception. There apparently seems to be some guy in the UK who passed away. And it's not clear if he had comorbidities or not, because they won't give us the details. But I'll spot you that. I'll spot you the one death worldwide and say essentially what we're hearing out of South Africa and what we're hearing essentially from the early studies is that Omicron is doing what viruses do. And okay, I'm just going to give you my armchair virology opinion here, which is that viruses want to survive. And so they don't survive by killing off their hosts. So as they mutate and evolve, they tend to mutate and evolve into something that is more spreadable, because they want to spread, but less deadly, less severe. And that appears to be what we're getting with Omicron. Now, that doesn't mean someone who has a very delicate condition isn't in danger. I don't want to minimize that risk. But for your average person, it looks like this is not going to be something that's going to be threatening to their lives. It's not going to put them in the hospital. It seems to be actually a pretty mild, milder than the regular flu this season, from what I've heard. But we'll see. It's early. I could be completely wrong. You can play this back at some point and say, Ross, an idiot. But based upon the evidence we're seeing now, and this is where the market is. This is why the market hasn't freaked out over the new variant. I think the market has more or less said, you know, this doesn't seem like it's going to be that bad. So they're looking past it. Either we're going to come up with a new vaccine, or we now have the medication to help people who are most at risk. But we're probably not going to get severe lockdowns over this. And the reality is that with some exceptions, and you've seen a couple of countries that have gone, you know, full boot on the throat. Some states like California and New York have had rising cases, and they've responded pretty severely. But I think generally the policy response has been muted to this. Even in Milwaukee, which, you know, had pretty restrictive policies during the worst part of the initial phase of the COVID virus. Then there have been some calls to return to that. Everyone needs to wear masks indoors and passports, everything else. And I think they've said, no, we don't really think we need to go there quite yet. And we haven't. So I think you're seeing the general conclusion that Omicron is not going to be a cause for the market falling out of bed. Doesn't mean something new can't pop up. There's always that danger. But based upon what we know at the moment, the market certainly is not viewing it that way. So finally, and I'll come back to your question in a moment. Let's just talk about inflation for a minute. Inflation, again, as we said, is roaring. We know that there's a demand side to it. The Fed's going to take care of that. We'll see if the Democrats can pass their big spending bill. If they do, it would actually be inflationary. But right now, it doesn't look like that's going to happen at the moment. On the supply side, we're actually starting to see supply chains getting sorted, which is what you'd expect. They're starting to figure it out. They're ramping up production. They're building some new factories. They're finally figuring out how to get stuff off the ship onto a truck and, you know, into the middle of the United States. So I think you're going to continue to see that. Bottlenecks are getting freed up. Supply chains getting sorted. And it's going to be lumpy. Again, certain industries are going to struggle. And so you're hearing autos don't sound so optimistic. But in other spaces, there is more optimism. Say, yeah, we're starting to see things get a little better and a little looser. But I think that the market is viewing this as, yeah, supply chain thing's going to get solved. So I think that part of the inflation picture also is starting to look a little more positive. Now, you have some wild cards here. One wild card is China. Again, China makes a lot of stuff for us and the rest of the world. And China right now is itself trying to figure out what to do with the Omicron variant. Given the nature of that regime, they tend to go into a very, very restrictive lockdown very quickly. That's just been their response function. And the concern is if they really think Omicron's a threat, they can start shutting down factories. And if they start shutting down factories, there goes our whole supply chain, you know, ray of sunshine. It's not clear yet. China has a bunch of problems at the moment with their economy. They've got some real estate companies that are blowing up. And so they've got issues in their credit section. They've got problems. So they're very sensitive to not shutting down their economy when it's already struggling. We had data out of China last night that was very, very poor. So that's just a wild card. You got to see what China does. The other big wild card is employment, as we discussed. On paper, you'd say, well, if wages are going up, the virus threat is going down, and stimulus payments are stopped, well, people might at some point have to, I don't know, go to work and begin earning a living again. And maybe they may have changed their lifestyle, as you said. But at the same time, they may decide, I'm bored just sitting at home. Looks like the coast is clear. Looks like I can get a raise. I'm going back to work. So that just bears watching, because the big fear here is that this inflation we're experiencing now starts getting persistent. It becomes the inflation that we saw back in the 80s, Karen, as you may recall, where everyone's they talk about it. Economists talk about it in terms of inflation expectations. And all of a sudden, people's mindset starts thinking, you know what, I better buy it now because it's going to be more expensive later. If people start thinking like that all the time, well, that becomes a behavior. And so the economists are worried about that. They're also worried about what's known as wage push inflation. So if you see, and we're seeing a little bit of it now, if you're seeing labor becoming more emboldened, more strikes, more people trying to unionize, more demands for higher wages, well, then you get the wage push inflation problem, where you get into a cycle where wages are increased, the costs are passed through in prices to consumers, and as prices are passed through the consumers, well, consumers are also workers. They want higher wages to pay for them. You see how the spiral goes? It sort of feels.
Yes.
And so that's a concern. So that's another wild card. So when you look at overall, you'd say, okay, inflation looks like it should be under control, but there are some caveats to that. And when we come back from the break, I'll answer your question about the new normal.
You know, the thing too, Mike, is that I think some habits have changed. You know, it says it takes 6 months to 8 months to change a habit. And we've been into this coronavirus for what, almost 2 years, a year and a half. And so people's lifestyles have changed and they've learned to eat at home and not go out as much. I mean, when I sit down with a client and they'll say, I've got so much cash on hand, I'm not doing anything. You know, we haven't been spending any money. And you go into the restaurants and most of the restaurants are only open Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and they can't get enough help. They're half full. You see all these empty tables and you wonder, why am I waiting? But they don't have enough waiters or waitresses or cooks. And so many of those people in that industry change jobs. Because, you know, they couldn't make a living and they didn't know when their jobs would come back. So I see that when I talk about, you know, what's the new normal, it's there's so many things that it seems like it's some of the surface jobs that have really suffered the most. And there's signs everywhere on every single, you know, service business. You know, we're hiring all jobs. I saw one today. We're hiring all jobs. And so my guest today is Mike Roth. And we have been talking about the economy and what's going on. And I know his crystal ball is coming out to give us an idea about the 2022. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. My guest today is Mike Roth. He's a founding partner of Stark Investments. And we have been talking about where we've been, where we are, and where we're going. So, Mike, where are we going? And I had asked you about that new normal. It's like, will we never go to restaurants to eat again on Mondays and Tuesdays and Sundays?
Well, I wish I had a better crystal ball. My gut, and this is, so I'm just telling you sort of my view of it, is that we will have a slow but steady return to normal, or at least what looks a lot like the pre-pandemic normal. But you're absolutely correct. In the near term, we've seen a lot of things, a lot of behaviors change. You have some people who I fear are going to be wearing masks the rest of their lives. I mean, there are some people who just have some fear, but they've become so conditioned to it that they're going to be ultra sensitive for a long time, maybe forever, who knows. But when you look at the majority of people, and I look at places where policies have been less restrictive, people go to Lambeau Field, people go to college football games, people want to go to concerts. And I think that you're going to see over time, as people get more comfortable, fear recedes, you will see a return to normal behavior. There's a reason why people go to restaurants. They enjoy the experience. Maybe there's still, there's still too many scars from the whole experience for them to just throw open the doors and go out the way they used to. But I think people are starting to come back slowly, and it's lumpy though. It is very lumpy, and as you said, the experience is really not up to snuff. Just using restaurants as an example, absolutely correct. They are still struggling to get wait staff, to get cook staff, and as a result, they've had to downsize menus. They've had to downsize the experience. They're struggling. They cut back on ingredients. I mean, so at some point, hopefully it tips back to a more normal situation where they're fully staffed and the menu's robust again and all of those things. But I do think that you're not going to see, or you're going to see a great reluctance to go back to the lockdown mentality. I don't think it's been, and I say this with reservation, but generally speaking, I don't think it's been politically popular. How could it be? Nobody wants to be in a lockdown situation. Some people, I think, have been happy with it because they are very afraid and they're happy to be locked down. But I think in general, people want to get back to their lives, and people are sort of done with cowering in fear in their homes. And they've got science and the facts to back it up. As I said, it doesn't look like the new variant is going to kill anybody, because it hasn't, at least to this date, with this one exception, a guy in the UK. So again, there are some people who would immediately, just hearing that, think I'm the worst person on the planet and I'm an anti-vaxxer and everything else. And I can only say I'm not, but But if you ask me what I think is going to happen with the economy and the markets, I think the economy is going to continue to heal and the markets will respond to that. In fact, the markets are way ahead of the economy. They see this reflation trade. They see the economy coming back and people are buying stocks based on that idea. And yeah, it was derailed a little bit and it'll get derailed anytime they think there's a new variant on the horizon that could be a problem. But right now, I'd say the trajectory is exactly what seems to be the consensus going into 2022. I can't believe I'm saying 2022. Yes, 2022, which is we're going to see continued growth, slower growth, because obviously now we have the Fed tapping the brakes and you have, inflation to fight. Those are headwinds. So you've got some headwinds for the economy, which means headwinds for the market. But the reality is that there are still a lot of places to put your money. The idea that returns will be less than 20%, say they're 10%. I'm not going to stick my hand in the fire and try to make that prediction because I have absolutely no idea. There's too many variables. But right now we're talking about interest rates being raised to 0.75. So that's not going to, make anybody excited anytime soon. So you're still looking at fairly muted returns in fixed income, money markets, and it's not going to make any money there. Yes, the valuations are high in the stock market, but I think people are thinking there's upside still. And the upside is going to, I don't know how long this prediction is good for, because we could get 6 months into this and obviously things could be going badly, but I think at least for the first part of the year the anticipation is that the market's going to have upside. It'll be on the back of the idea that despite the headwinds, the economy seems to be getting better, people are going back to work, businesses are reopening, there's actually life in downtown Milwaukee because they're putting people back in the towers. We haven't seen any of that. And on the back of that, the restaurants are going to do well, because guess what? There are people going to lunch at noontime and all these things. There's a huge multiplier effect as we return to normal. So I know there's a lot of thinking around the new normal and people working from home and everything else. And there's going to be some of that. I mean, obviously, for some people, they're going to figure out better ways to do things. As you said, some people are going to figure out, I don't need two incomes. Or I have a better life doing something else. But I think for the macro picture, for the economy and for the market, it'll continue to be a healing process. But I think absent some curveball out of left field, it's going to be a positive experience.
I do too. And I feel that one of the important things to mention is that, when you're in the market needs to go up and down. And the benefit to owning quality and being invested for the long haul, not trying to second guess the market. I mean, if you own quality, even if the markets go up and when they go down, and if you're reinvesting dividends and you're taking advantage, those stocks and equities will come back. People don't really lose money until they invest in something poorly that blows up, or if they have to sell at a time when the market's down. And so then again, it's just being really aware of what your cash flow is and knowing what you own and why you own it and how it's going to react to a positive market or a negative market. And really, if my impression is, if you're investing well and you're investing smart, even when the market goes down, you should be okay.
You shouldn't be panicking. That's absolutely correct, because you obviously have to have the right time horizon. And I should have mentioned one thing about, there's this concept of market breadth. So in the S&P, if you take out the top five names in the S&P, it's still up 17% for the year. So to your point, good quality names are going to perform. NASDAQ is interesting. You take out the top five NASDAQ names, it goes from being up 17% to down 25%.
Yeah.
So Yeah, so you got to be careful.
If you're going to chase the markets and if you're going to take on more risk, then you can expect that you'll have more volatility. But for most of my clients, they're really looking at preservation of capital, keeping up with inflation, and, you know, owning high quality and having an idea of what to expect. And I think that most people should expect that as a normal way of investing in their portfolio. And we're almost at time, Mike. And honestly, it's always such a pleasure having you. And I'll look forward to looking at your predictions in July or so, and we'll see exactly what's going on. My guest today is Mike Roth. He's a founding partner at Stark Investments. And thank you very much once again. And as always, I hope that I've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen. Have a really great weekend. Bye-bye.